I'm Dr. Sue, and I cure conflict. What if I told you, you can choose to become the solution to any conflict in your life? Let's move beyond divorce and conflict together. I'm Dr. Sue. We cure conflicts. Hi, everybody. I am Dr. Sue, and this is where you do come to solve your conflicts. Yep, we cure conflicts, and we take you beyond your divorce to do it. And don't ever forget that you can become the solution to any conflict within your life. And one conflict that people are in a lot after their divorce, during their divorce, is dealing with their financial matters. And today, we have an expert on with us that has been there herself and is now helping others to manage their financial issues as they go through their divorce. And her name is Stephanie Koppel. She is a financial coach at Companion Financial Coaching. She is a CPA and a background in accounting, and she brings her financial expertise and a personal touch as she works one-on-one with her clients to educate and empower them. Her goal is to support her clients to gain financial confidence and to make financial decisions that align with their goals and help them achieve the life that they want to be living. Stephanie strives to guide her clients to gain ownership of their financial situation by providing compassionate and non-judgmental steps by giving step-by-step support. She is a divorced mother of two and resides in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Stephanie, and welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here because you are somebody that has been there as somebody that has gone through a divorce, and you also know a lot about finances. So I'd love if you would start off talking about your own journey and what led you to go into helping people with their finances.
Absolutely. So I have always been interested in finance. And I started when I was young, kind of helping friends and family as we kind of grew up and went through college and started jobs. And it became really clear to me that financial education is something that's not taught, but every single person needs it. And it just was so frustrating to watch people be held back by their financial decisions and their financial situations, and just not really know the next steps to take to get themselves out of that situation and into a place of financial stability. And as I went through my own divorce a few years ago, I had people come up to me and say that, you know, they don't wish to get a divorce now, but just seeing me get divorced, realized that they wouldn't even be able to take that next step because financially they don't have the confidence to manage their own finances or even think about how they would do that. And that really just pained me to see, again, people held back by their maybe lack of knowledge or confidence in that area. Because I really believe that your finances can empower you to take that next step, whatever that may be, whether it's leaving a marriage or starting a business or whatever is important to you.
What was most difficult for you in terms of your divorce, and was finances one of the issues that you had concerns about for yourself?
I think for myself, the hardest part of my divorce was probably just so many changes at once. You know, you're dealing with the change of now you are no longer in a partnership and you maybe have the same responsibilities as you did before, but now it's only you to manage that. So that was definitely a challenge at first, just to kind of shift that mindset a bit. But financially, I think my biggest challenge was kind of, again, it was more reframing my mindset that I could now have full control over my own finances. Mm. And I could make that choice to decide how I get to use that to better my own life.
So when you had challenges within your own life that felt as though you couldn't handle them, did that lead you to make impulsive decisions even when it came to finances? Was that what you were going through, or you see what other people are going through when it comes to that?
Yeah, I definitely see other people going through that and kind of, you know, sometimes you're overwhelmed in so many areas of your life. Finances are a really easy thing to push to the side and say like, well, you know, I'm just going to take that trip. I'm going to buy that bag and I'll deal with the consequences of that later. And I see that happen quite often.
Yes. And when they are not able to make those decisions based on their finances, because that is something that does become very difficult. It's a scary thing for people, especially for people going through a divorce that maybe have never handled the finances before. So what actionable steps or tips do you have for people that are going through this in terms of budgeting or what they can do to get back on their feet? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So the first place I always recommend starting is putting down onto paper or onto an Excel spreadsheet your financial picture. Map it all out. Most people have never seen all of their accounts, all of their debt, all in one place. And that is absolutely the first step in moving forward, is mapping out where you are right now, and making sure that you understand all the pieces of the financial picture. Looking at, do you have retirement accounts? How much is in there? What does your debt look like? At what point will you be debt free if you're working to pay that off? Just taking a look at the larger picture and making sure you understand each of the pieces, that would absolutely be the first step. And from there, you can look at the difference between where you are and where you'd like to be. Maybe that means paying off debt. Maybe that means increasing retirement savings. Maybe that means increasing your short-term savings for a more short-term goal. But figuring out where you are currently and then kind of going from there and viewing where you want to be, then you can start to figure out how to bridge that gap.
Do you think that bridging the gap within your own life in terms of healing and moving forward in your own divorce helps you bridge the gap with finances and all other things within your life?
I really do. You know, going through my divorce, and I'm sure this was other people's experiences as well, there's so many things out of your control. You can't control how other people are going to react to you. You can't fully control the divorce process. It's, you know, between two people. There's so much that is out of your personal control that I think sitting down and looking at your finances is one thing you have 100% control over. You can absolutely map all that out and look at where you are. That is something that every single person is capable of, no matter what their background. Creating that starting point is the hardest part. From there, you can take small steps to educate yourself, to start making changes in your spending, things like that. But that first step is so important, and it's really empowering to start thinking about bridging that gap and what are you capable of? Because truly everyone is capable of taking that into their own hands. And I think for me, it was so exciting to kind of look at my financial picture and then sit and think, what do I want to be able to spend my money on? Is it taking my kids on one big vacation every year? Is it making sure I'm saving enough so I can cover all their college expenses? That was an exciting moment in a time when it kind of felt like a lot of change and things happening to me. That was a point when I could say, what do I want? And then how am I going to get there?
Right. And so when you're talking about how you're going to get there, you have to have a plan, right? Just like you have a plan with anything in life. So planning out a strategic financial plan really helps, doesn't it? But what if people don't know what to do or what to ask for in a financial settlement? What do you ask for? How do you go about that?
There are a lot of ways. And I think, again, referring to that financial picture that you've painted can help get you there. You can kind of see the gap. The main things that you want are making sure that you have some type of retirement, if that's something that you're negotiating. You want to also be able to look at your current expenses and then look at what you might need moving forward. Because many people coming into divorce have not thought about their spending and how much it takes to support the lifestyle that they've been living. And so having an idea of how much you've been spending can help you gauge what would be very challenging to live off of, what your goal might be to support the lifestyle that you want.
And what are the three most important tips or steps that people can take when they're trying to figure out their financial path? Is there three important tips that you can give?
I think my top three things that I would suggest that my clients really focus on is paying off debt as soon as possible. That is money that you are giving away, essentially. And that's money that could be in your pocket supporting things that you want. The next tip would be to save, save, save. The earlier that you can start saving, the more you're taking advantage of compound interest, which is the easiest way to gain wealth, whether that is in a savings account or whether you're talking about the compounding in your investment or retirement account. The sooner you put money in, the more compound interest you earned. And that is free money for just putting money aside. So pay off debt, start saving. And then I would also always encourage my clients to look at their spending and ensure that their spending is aligning with their goals. There are so many people that say, my real goal is saving for a new car. But then you see them spending a lot of money on eating out at restaurants or spending a lot of money on vacations and not saving anything. So I think it's really important to really be intentional about how you're spending your money and take an honest look at your spending and make sure it really aligns with what you want.
What if you don't have the money to, you know, put out a budget and you have to go right back to work and you don't know how to find a job or where your talents can be used? Is there something that you can do within yourself or where to go to find out, you know, maybe what you're good at or what you can do and how to save money in a slow way to build yourself back up?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, especially recently in the pandemic, so many jobs now are remote, which is a really great option for people because it's expanding their opportunities. You're not limited to what is in the radius that you could drive, right? And so I think thinking about where your skills lie is probably the best place to start. Everyone's good at something. And looking into how you can utilize those skills in some kind of job is where I would start. But also you want to look at the intangibles of a job too. You want to look at the hours, the flexibility, depending on what your other responsibilities are. It's not always just about the income, but it's about whether you can work that job any hour of the day. Maybe you have kids and you're not able to work a 9-to-5. So looking at the big picture career-wise. As far as saving,
yes,
you know, regardless of whether you're saving $500 a month or $100 a month, saving anything is important. And you start small. Maybe you're only saving $10 a month. But starting down the path of putting something aside and letting it grow is the most important. And you can keep adding to the amount that you're saving when you're financially able.
So there are a lot of different tips that you can take to make a difference within your life when you are struggling to find your way financially. It really does matter, you know, I think, where you are and how you can map out a plan for yourself, because not everybody is in the same situation. So we're going to go to our first break, and when we come back, we are going to talk more about this and some other topics, and we will be back in just a moment.
Divorce is painful enough without it becoming the War of the Roses. Did you know that divorcing through the court system leaves most couples not only with a hole in their heart, but also a hole in their pockets? But there is another option. You can choose to have your divorce done differently, where everyone wins. Hello, I'm Lenore Myers of Divorce Done Differently, where my goal is to be part of your solution instead of part of your problem. With my 35 years of experience as a family law attorney and certified mediator, I can help you and your spouse have your divorce done differently, where you will be in control of making your financial and custody agreements in an economical, informed, amicable way without court involvement. Contact me, Lenore Myers, at divorcedondifferentlypa.com or just call me at 215-470-3121 so you and I can discuss free of charge the variety of options available to you and your spouse to help you have your divorce done differently.
Getting divorced and need help with a family law problem? Turn to me, family law attorney Randy Rubin. I'm an advocate for my clients' goals with compassion and zealous advocacy. What makes me special is that I know divorce professionally and personally. I'm a seasoned trial attorney with the added benefit of significant experience in business and real estate. I can assist you with identifying your goals and will seek an early resolution when possible. My practice includes divorce, equitable distribution, support, premarital and postnuptial counseling, custody, protection from abuse, and adoption. I litigate in courts in Bucks County, Chester County, Delaware County, Montgomery County, and Philadelphia County, and throughout Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey. Call me today to schedule your consultation at 215-400-2827. Or email me at rrubin@clehr.com. You will not be disappointed.
Women who attend the Second Saturday Workshop leave our classroom with hope, information, and support. Every month, women gather at locations in suburban Philadelphia and South Jersey to get the facts and information they need from attorneys, therapists, and financial planners. We do not promote or encourage divorce. If a woman finds herself on that path, we want her to have the information she needs to make good decisions. For more information, go to secondsaturday.com or call 215-699-6993.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. Sue and you're listening to the Dr. Sue Show. And this is where we help you cure the conflicts within your life. In the first half of our show today, we were talking with Stephanie Koppel. She is a financial planner that helps you move through your divorce. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi there.
Hi, welcome back. So thank you. You've given our listeners so many great tips today. What are a few more tips that you can give them in terms of getting their life in order to move through their divorce financially? Is there a specific one tip that you can give them?
I think what I would say is being intentional and just paying attention. I think just really thinking about what is important to you and making that your financial priority. That would be my suggestion to those getting divorced.
Great. And can you tell everyone how they can get in touch with you?
Absolutely. You can find me online. My website is www.companionfinancialcoaching.com. And you can also email me, Stephanie@companionfinancialcoaching.com.
Thank you so much for being on the show today and giving our guests great information.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. Have a wonderful day and keep on doing the great work that you're doing.
Thanks so much. You too.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. You know what? We just learned some great information about managing your finances. And now we're going to go to another great expert that is going to come on our show and talk about healing with your children and how to do that. And his name is Noam Rocker. And I would like to welcome him to the show. Hi, Noam.
Hi, Sue. How are you?
How are you? Thank you so much for coming on today. It's such a great pleasure to have you on.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me as a guest. And if I may say, it's Noam Rocker.
Thank you. I pronounced it wrong.
It's okay. Don't worry about
it. But I'm just going to call you Noam. How's that?
That sounds great. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
And you can call me Dr. Sue.
I will do that. Thank you, Dr. Sue.
Tell me a little bit and tell our listeners about your background and how you have come to do your work in high conflict divorce.
Sure. I appreciate that, Dr. Sue. So I'm a single dad living in Pasadena with two beautiful boys. And I co-parent, I think, pretty well with my ex. I have a background as a rabbi and a divorce coach. And so I offer coaching and spiritual coaching, divorce coaching and spiritual coaching to anyone seeking it. It's important to know that divorce coaching isn't pro-divorce, but really pro what you want when you consider divorce, when you think about it. And for me, this whole process has been both personal and professional in terms of, you know, learning what it's like to go through a major transition, to figure out what life is like during that transition, and to also imagine and envision what that life will look like post-transition. And being a coach of both divorce and spirituality has given me an opportunity to kind of step back from that personally and think about that, how all that works for other people who are going through the circumstances.
Right. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I think there is a very big connection between spirituality and moving through a difficult time in your life when it comes to divorce, when you're in so much pain. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I would agree with you 110%. I mean, divorce is a death. It really is. There's a big death that occurs in that moment. Mm. You know, there's the death of your marriage, plain and simple. There's also the death of the life that you thought you were living. There's the death of the future that you thought you were going to have. And then for your children, there's equally the grief of the death of the family unit that they understood and the reality that they were participants in. And all that requires a spiritual perspective to say, what am I going through right now? And how can I get through it whole in some way without kind of losing myself entirely, right? Like, how do I go through it with integrity and accountability and grace and dignity, so much so that it is my life that I am taking back after this moment of death?
Let's talk about that for a little bit, because I love what you said there with grace and dignity. And you and I were both on a panel last night where we were talking about this a lot, with compassion and grace and dignity. And when you're going through a difficult divorce with somebody and they are just coming at you day and night, right?
Yep.
How do you go within yourself and create a calmness within yourself so you do not react in the same way in which the reactions are coming towards you.
That's a great point. That's a really great point. People can, you know, stimulate us externally, and we don't really understand what's going on, right? People just kind of throw things at us, and as human beings, we can get caught in the headlights. We can be like a deer in headlights, just kind of staring it down, and our natural reactions might be fight or flight. They might be defensive in some way, and so we have this kind of self-confidence reaction in which we fight back almost immediately, but the word that you bring up, which is really key, is compassion. And it was only a few years ago that I came to really understand the difference between self-confidence and self-compassion.
Please teach us.
I'd be happy to share. Self-confidence is when you look at the scenario and you go, I can handle this, right? This is what it is, right? I know this whole thing, right? I can just fire back because I've got all my tools with me. Self-compassion is a little different. Self-compassion says, hold up a second, let's pause, let's take a beat, which is to say that this scenario might not go well and that it's going to be difficult, but we are going to be okay nonetheless. The difficulty with self-confidence is that it tends to over-prepare us, and we may not actually take all the things into consideration that we think are really important, and so we could actually fail as a result of self-confidence. But with self-compassion, we've got that moment to actually do some internal exploration and remind ourselves of what our real strengths are, but also to see what our weaknesses are and to see the advantages and the opportunities that come from those weaknesses, the areas of growth and learning that we could do that could actually make us better to go through the divorce process. What could we learn about ourselves, right, that could make us better throughout the divorce process?
I know, I love what you just said there. What can we learn about ourselves about what is going on here? How can we choose to make a change that will benefit us, and what actionable steps can we take to do that? Now, you are also a rabbi, correct?
Yes.
Yes,
I am.
You are, which is wonderful. What can you provide our listeners with today in terms of going within themselves and making a choice to really begin to look at themselves and their own pain and how to go on that journey and how that will guide them to learn more about themselves and grow from this devastating circumstance that is hurting them and that they are going through. What I find in most of my work is that they begin to become stuck there. Rabbi, they become stuck in the pain and they can't move beyond this, or they can't look at themselves or their own roles in what has transpired. What guidance can you give us today on that?
So I would suggest that the first step for anyone, given the fact that there's a loss, and granted there are any number of steps, just practical steps that you have to take in divorce, right? You got to get a team around you. You got to get, you know, someone who's going to help you out legally with the process. You should also have a therapist. You should also, I would say, have a divorce coach, someone who can help you think of the powerful questions that are going to enable you to really think clearly about what your decisions are. But I would also say from a spiritual perspective, from a rabbinic perspective, that given that there's this loss, that also requires grieving, right? A death requires grieving. And it's certainly different than a physical death. Lord knows that's a difficult thing for people to come to grips with when we lose someone permanently in our lives and we have to bury them. But that process of burial and grieving is actually what helps us get through it. It provides the closure that we need, right? So in death, there can be a loss, right? And there is a loss, but there can also be a gain, right? And that gain is the new opportunity that we see as a result of having closed things off. And that new opportunity is to say, okay, how do I live my life now as an individual, now that person isn't in my life as intimately as they used to be? What did I learn from that circumstance that I can do differently now? And how can I act differently now that I've learned those things from that circumstance? And when you're on your own, right, this is one of the things that kind of happens. You know, if you lost one of your five senses, another one might become heightened, right? They often talk about people who are blind, right? Their sense of hearing becomes heightened, and that helps them kind of suss out a room, so to speak, or understand their surroundings a little bit more, right? Because they can't see, their hearing ends up taking over and becoming stronger. I would suggest to say that our internal spirit becomes stronger with each loss that we have, because it means that we have to adjust to figure out a way that we're going to compensate. And if we can work through it with people who are supportive and loving and helpful to us and can remind us just exactly how strong and capable we are, we can find those things. And so I'll give you an example. For me, I was blindsided by divorce. And so I didn't know what to do, but I worked through it with a therapist and realized that in the process of it, I actually had something called grit and resilience. And I didn't even know that they were there because I was just so focused on how much of a screw up I must have been and how I needed to kick this thing in the butt and get it over with, right? And just get what I needed. And that was all the self-confidence I had, right? But when I took a step back to go to that self-compassion place, I realized that I could actually do this in a way that provided me with a great amount of meaning and reminded me of just how strong I was because of that grit and resilience.
What you just said, I have so many questions about, and you're so on point with what you're saying. First of all, let's go back to grief for a second.
Sure.
When we are grieving a loss, it is so difficult to say you should grieve it this way or you should grieve it that way. No, grief takes its own path in its own time. Mm-hmm. And not everybody is going to fall to the floor and cry like a baby when a divorce happens. However, a lot of times you are going to feel those emotions of sadness and depression and maybe even cry from time to time. But that grief continues over time in different ways when you're dealing with the loss of the family, maybe the loss of a connection that you once had with your children, or mourning the loss of the dream that you had of raising your children with this other human being that you made a promise to. These are all different sorts and aspects of grieving. And do you suggest that as you go through these aspects of grieving, that you give yourself that self-compassion and healing at each moment this comes on instead of pushing away those feelings? Take them in, be with them, and let them flow through you. And that flowing through is what will heal you and bring you back time and time again to the resiliency.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. Feelings are totally natural. And particularly in the grief process, any number of feelings. I mean, you could have the full spectrum, right? What we call the cocktail,
yes.
Right? All of them almost happening at once. There could be sadness and anger, but also happiness in some way. I mean, it's weird how we can kind of integrate all those things into ourselves at one point, given one circumstance. But it's important to remember that, as you say, feelings are natural. They're also necessary because that is how we process the real human experiences that we're going through. And it should be a sign to anyone that even if you are going through a death, right, of a marriage and you're dealing with that loss, you are still very much alive. And your feelings are indicators of that. And it's important to remember, as you said, that grief lasts in different ways and happens for people in different ways. And one of the best metaphors and images, I think, of understanding grief was taught to me in the sense of we look at ourselves like a box, right? And
yes.
Each a four-sided box, and each of those sides is very sensitive, right? That's us. Those are our feelings, right? That's how we react to things. And grief is like a big red ball that exists within that box. And when it first happens, when the loss first occurs, the ball is just so big. It takes up all the space, and it touches all four sides of those at once. Right. And you can't really get any perspective on it because you're just so into it. It's like the expression, you're standing too close to the elephant.
Yes.
You can't know that it's an elephant because you're right up next to it. You have to take like 20, 30 feet back to say, oh, my God, look at that gigantic thing that's in my way. And after several years of loss or several years of grieving, then you can step back and say, oh, my God, look at what that was. So I'll give you an example. I had a friend who died when I was 28, someone who was very close to me. Mm. And I wandered around a long time in grief, wondering why it was still kind of plaguing me at that time. And that was my understanding, was that grief was a plague rather than a natural emotion. And that what I was going through, this mourning process, was totally natural. Over time, that red rubber ball, that grief, gets smaller inside us.
Yes.
But it exists. Because it's a natural human emotion. It's not going away. It just gets smaller. And it still bounces around from time to time. But the smaller it gets, if you imagine, right, the less time or the less frequency it does in terms of hitting those sensitive walls of ours.
Yes.
And so it might pop up, let's say, we're in the middle of doing something we used to do with our best friend who's no longer around, right? Or we heard a song, right, that we used to listen to with our ex-partner, right? And that brings up a grief. It's a twinge of sadness of, oh, my God, I remember that memory, how good it was. But it's much smaller with time gone out because we've had a chance to process and live through and remind ourselves that there's still life to live and there's still love to explore and relationships to be part of. And so that ball gets smaller, even if it does bounce around. And then because it's also smaller, not only does it happen less frequently, but the pain isn't so bad. It really isn't. It becomes much easier to deal with because our perspective from it, like I said, is much further away from the elephant at that point. And we can visualize and see how it fits into the larger context of things.
And that we're recognizing it when it comes up and we're not running from it. I just want to remind everyone that you're listening to the Dr. Sue Show. This is where we help you move through and beyond the conflicts in your life, beyond your divorce, and we cure conflict. And we are talking right now with Rabbi Noam Rauscher. Did I say it right, Noam, that time?
Close. Rauscher.
Dr. Rauscher.
Noam Rauscher.
I can't get it, but now I got it. Noam Rauscher.
You did a great job.
I will never forget it again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And he is talking to us about how to get through your own pain when you're going through a divorce. He has been there. He has done it, and he is giving us great actionable steps that we can take to do this today. I'd like to get back to the other thing that you said, which was about surround yourself with compassionate people. How important is that when you are going through this?
Well, it's crucial. I mean, compassion, if we were to explore it, means to suffer along with someone. And to suffer along with someone, to have someone who's with you to carry that pain a little bit, it literally does lighten the load. I once learned an expression when I was working at the Yale Psychiatric Hospital. And I want to emphasize that I was working there. But so one of the things we said is that shared joy is double joy and shared sorrow is half sorrow. And that's true, right? The more you share your joy, it multiplies in exponential forms. And the more you share your sorrow with compassionate people, the less the load feels on you, and it becomes easier to handle because other people have gone through it, or they see you and they hear you and they understand you. And so therefore you don't have to explain yourself. You know that you can be loved in that way, and you can let go and give off, let go of whatever it is that you're going through and put it on them for a little bit because they will carry it with you.
Yes. And they will be there sometimes just to listen to you. You don't always need to give back advice to somebody that is going through this. Sometimes people that are going through this just need to vent. And I think a lot of times people feel that they need to have all the answers for somebody. But really, a lot of times with somebody going through this amount of pain, they just need to hear, I'm here for you. I love you. I support you. And that's enough. Correct?
That's exactly right. Just let it out. Just let me be here and let me see it and let me hear it. That's exactly right. I know, particularly for men, right, that might be something that could be really helpful. Men tend to isolate, and they tend to, well, if they don't share their emotions, they don't process them, like you said, when they naturally flow through you, they become impacted. And impacted emotions can build up over time and come out in really ugly and destructive ways. And so to simply create a vessel for someone in which you say, it's okay to cry. I love you. There's no shame in that. There is no judgment. I am here because that is natural and you can do that with me. That can actually create a real great space of safety and an opportunity for someone to let things go and to process exactly what they're going through without judgment and shame. And it's particularly important to know that guys have gone through, part of the reasons why guys impact their emotions and push them down is because we have been taught to be ashamed of them. And we feel like we're going to be judged with them because they are outside of the general male archetype of what it looks like, right? Which is strong and stoic and the worker bee and the warrior who simply pushes through the pain. The pain is something that needs to be dealt with, as you said. It needs to be grieved and it needs to be expressed. And so there we can get on with our lives, but we need compassionate people around us who are simply going to be there and listen and maybe not offer any type of other words other than I love you and I hear you.
Yes. You know, when I hear those words for myself sometimes, when I'm going through a difficult time in my life, that's really all I need to hear to feel better. I don't want a solution.
That's right. That's right.
I just want to know that I have somebody by my side that's just, that I know is there for me if I want to just come talk and let it out.
That's exactly right. A tribes person.
Yes.
Someone who's going to be by your side and walk with you through it.
Exactly. That is really what gives us the openness to feel vulnerable and to see and realize that somebody else really is there for us that can allow us to be vulnerable. Because when you're going through something this painful, it is hard to be vulnerable, isn't it? Because you don't know what somebody else is going to say to you that's going to trigger you. Did you ever feel that way when you were going through your divorce?
Oh, I was certainly sensitive about it. I was sensitive towards the friends I have that who are married, right, and don't necessarily understand this, right, and feeling like a screw up and feeling like there was a stigma on me because I couldn't make my marriage work or that my marriage failed. And particularly in the Jewish community where the idea of the solid, you know, whole nuclear family is what perpetuates the tradition and culture, essentially, is you step outside of that. And let's not kid ourselves, pandemic or not, quarantine or not, divorce is isolating.
Yes.
No matter, I mean, even if the percentage of divorce in the country, you know, is close to 50%, it's still an isolating thing because people don't really talk about it. And because of the stigmas, it forces you to go inside and you're not going to have a lot of married friends rushing to your aid because they feel like you've got some divorce, you know, juice on you that's going to get off on them and contaminate what they've got going on. Or it reflects something that is actually already going on in their marriage and they don't want it to be a reality just because it is for you. And so to simply have people there to remind you that you're not alone, that you're not a freak, right?
Right.
And that what you're going through is perfectly normal and pretty average for the United States if all, right, is actually really rewarding and can be very liberating. And I would also suggest empowering. Right.
Mm.
People need to know that they're not alone if they're going to be able to move forward, or else what's the point? You're still doing things alone.
Yes, this is fascinating what you're talking about today and how you're tying everything under one umbrella, which I would like to call compassion. You know, that's
yes.
a big thing that I really talk about and believe in.
Yes.
And you're talking about it in so many different ways. I mean, self-compassion, being compassionate to, you know, what is going on around you, giving compassion to others.
Yes.
I think this is just so important in talking about how to heal yourself, because if you're not healed, right, then you're not really good to anybody else, are you, including your own children that are also oftentimes caught up in all of this, and they need their parents to be present more than ever with them, instead of being present about maybe destroying the other parent or the finances or everything else that is going on. What would you say
about
that?
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I mean, I think that's one of the biggest realities you come to grips with. And it's somewhat scary when you first go into divorce, which is to say, now I have to do this stuff on my own. But the self-compassion that you impose upon yourself or that you bring upon yourself can remind you just exactly of how strong you are, which is to say, this may not be easy, but you do have the tools to get through it. And even if there are failures and mistakes along the way, you are still going to be able to handle things because you have the tools that are really necessary to get through it.
Mm. And what are some of those tools that you could suggest that people can do to work on the self-healing aspect of this with themselves? Do you have any specific tools that you have people do or give them when they are going through this, when they're in times
yes,
of deep pain?
Yes, absolutely. So first of all, if we're dealing with grief, right, like I said, there's got to be a mourning process. And, you know, religions are really wonderful in rituals that provide, you know, the grief process to be, you know, experienced and to also go through mourning. But you don't need to be a religious person in order to mourn and grieve, right? What we need to do is find a way to find closure. That's what the rituals actually do. The burial process is a way of saying we are putting this person into the place where they should be so that they can move on, right? And so that we can move on. And this is what we do. And so I would suggest that you can work with someone to develop a process that allows you to say goodbye, right, to whatever has happened. So perhaps you need to launch, I don't know, a small, you know, one of those balloons with a little candle in it into the air. I don't want to spark any wildfires here in Southern California. But my point is to say, to create a process of letting go, whatever it is that you need to do to let go and to let that thing just leave and go where it needs to go, can actually be really helpful. You could take some bread and crush it up into your hand and cast it off into the wind or cast it off into the water. You could maybe write the name or write the idea of your marriage down on a piece of paper and then perhaps burn it. That might be another good way to say goodbye. Mm. And then I think there are other activities that are really necessary, just in terms to remind us of how powerful we really can be, what strengths do we really have. And so I think certainly exercising can be really helpful in that way. Sometimes when we get into our physical bodies and we remind our physical bodies just how strong we are, that can in turn remind us how emotionally strong we can be and resilient we can be as well. And it certainly helps to look at ourselves in the mirror after exercising for a considerable amount of time and perhaps see some real kind of good gains in that, to say, oh my God, I look like a new person and I feel healthy. Mm-hmm. And all those things kind of working together will certainly help. I would also suggest that like music can be really inspirational. Yes. I know for me, right, I've got a whole playlist about breakup songs and that can be a real good soothing thing, right? But if I listen to it forever, I'm going to go down into a real downward spiral because it's just perpetuating the message and the emotions in my head. And I found that there are times if I simply just switch the song to something that is the opposite, right? If divorce is the death, then I want life afterwards, right? And so if I can switch to another song that just gets me in a better mood, that is pure happiness or pure joy and absolutely nothing to do with death or sadness, my whole world changes. And so sometimes it's about kind of exploring the atmosphere that we've created for ourselves, whether it's through music or through the other people that we associate, right? If you have someone that you're talking to about divorce that is constantly negative, right, then that could also be impeding your process for healthy living as well, right, and moving forward. And that's not to say that we should be entirely positive the entire time. I firmly stand with the idea that there is something called toxic positivity, right, that it can be detrimental to us to be so positive, that sometimes we need to have a much more realistic outlook of what things are like. And so I think if we create an atmosphere that is realistic, that is not kind of bombarding us with the same messages all the time, that flips the script, then we have an opportunity to do, as you said, just to care for ourselves, to put that breathing mask on when the pressure drops in the airplane and we feel some turbulence, to breathe ourselves first, to get into a healthier space, and then to also walk with our children through the process when they need to do so as well. Because if we're not healthy, it's not going to be healthy for them. There's no question.
Yes. You know, something that you brought to my mind when you said about listening to the playlist and every song that comes up is just sadder than the next and putting you into a place where that's the feeling that you are going to move right on into.
That's right. That's exactly. Makes it really easy. And maybe you do need that, right? Maybe you do need a catalyst to help you grieve. But the point is that, like, you can't stay in grief forever.
No, you can't. Because if you do, you're just going to drown in a pool of sadness and depression.
That's exactly right. Then there's a real internal death. And that's when things, I think, get scary.
Go on with that, please.
Well, there's an internal death, which is to say that you give up. Right. Which is to say that there's no light at the end, at the other end of the tunnel. Right. And it's very important, particularly in divorce, to be internally directed as opposed to externally directed. And that was something you brought up earlier, was the idea that your, you know, partner or ex-partner in a high conflict divorce can be throwing a lot of things at you. And how do you handle that? And again, it's easy to be defensive. But if you can look within and say, wait a second, what can I do about this? How can I take accountability? How can I walk through this with integrity? Right. And know that I can get through this with my own capabilities, right? And I don't have to be directed by the things that the other person is saying and doing. That's an incredibly empowering moment. It's difficult to see that. Sometimes we need another person to help us realize what we've got inside, but that form of internal direction is important when we're responding to external stimuli.
Yes, and I really am impressed with what you said about it's an internal death.
Yes.
It is. It is. And do you think, do some people keep alive the back and forth of the ongoing drama to keep it alive because they don't want to let go of the other person?
You know, I don't want to armchair psychologist anyone.
I'm just asking for
possible.
Your opinion. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I realize that, but yeah. I think it's entirely possible, right? I mean, you could have difficulty letting go of the divorce, and so it feels good from time to time just to kind of poke at your ex, right, and know that they're there in your life and know that you can communicate with them. That may not really be healthy, right? It's one thing to have a good co-parenting relationship and communicate about the details, you know, that are really important to you, right, that are necessary for co-parenting. It's another thing altogether to start discussing things that have really nothing to do with that, right? Because you're not building a life with that person anymore. You're building your own life. It just happens to be that you have children who are, they're not going anywhere. They will always be your children. That will be the link to that person. But the conversation shifts, I think, to when you're co-parenting being only about the children and not necessarily about your relationship, especially if it doesn't need any of improving, right?
Right?
If it's a difficult relationship, right? If it's still challenging and it's impacting the kids, that's one thing. Maybe you and your ex need to go to a couples counselor to see how you can get on the same page about working with your kids. But if it's not that, there's no sense in avoiding the drama, right? Or the potential confusion that comes with it. Sometimes it's better to let sleeping dogs lie.
I agree with you on that too. I was just, you know, asking because people often feed into what the other person is sending their way, and you don't have
Absolutely.
And
that, it's called emotional boomerang.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it's called. And it becomes a war that leads you into almost your, for me, it's almost as if this, they're leading themselves into a death because that's what comes of it. If you keep going down that negative road with the other person.
Yes, I completely agree.
Yes.
I completely agree. And the important thing to remember after a divorce is that you can move on from that. And it's important to consider different ways of doing it. Maybe you were Facebook friends at one point. You probably don't need to be Facebook friends at this point. There's nothing that says that you have to be just because you were once married. And in fact, it could create extra problems. People love posting pictures of their new spouses or new girlfriends or boyfriends, whoever they're dating, these new adventures in their life, right? And that could equally create additional tensions because the ex could be like, well, what the heck are you doing without me, right? Or I don't like that person, or I don't like the feeling of being replaced. And all those things are real wonderful temptations for someone to reach out and to poke and to start playing that game of emotional boomerang.
Yes. And what that ends up doing is also putting you in a place where you're in combat zone all the time. And
that's
you
exactly
feel like
right.
you have to defend yourself every single moment. And that just zaps out the energy from yourself that you need
That's
to put
exactly
to
right.
other things within your life, which are your children.
And that those two words that you used are really crucial, which is your life, which is very different than from when it is when you're married, because when you're married, you say this is our life. And that's the biggest transition away, is to say that this is my life now. And you've spent so much time being married and building up this idea of our life that that becomes your reality. The new reality is that it's your life.
Yeah.
And even if you have kids that join you with someone else, you are still living your own life. You don't have to answer to your ex if there's nothing that says that you don't have to in the settlement agreement.
Right.
Right. And you certainly don't need to check with them about everything, especially if that's not listed in the settlement agreement either.
Right.
The point is to say is that, like, this is your life and you should be living it the way that you need and want to be living it.
Right. And not live it on the other person's terms. And that's what they're trying to bait you into doing.
That's exactly right.
And you don't have to. And it is your life. And you can recreate your life out of divorce in the way that you want to design it. Now, Rabbi, tell me more about your coaching practice, please. I would really like to hear about that.
So my coaching practice is called Walk With Me. I use that in both the literal and the figurative term. Just yesterday, I was meeting with a client and we went for a walk. That's what we do. I often find, I know it certainly happens with me, that when I go for a walk, when I'm going through a particularly confusing situation where it's hard to articulate both my emotions and my thoughts, a walk really helps. It just kind of moves my, it's like my brain is walking and it's processing those things. And I can go, oh, I felt that, but that's not really what it is. This is a secondary emotion. What I'm really feeling is jealousy, right? Which is why I'm so sad. And I'm jealous because of this. And this is what I think. I don't want that jealousy in my life, So this is what I'm going to do. And walking through it, right, can help people get a better idea. And so with my client, we meet at the same park every week, and we go for a walk, usually counterclockwise. Mm-hmm. And this third time we were meeting, we went counterclockwise. Either way, we did it in the reverse direction.
I get it. I think the listeners get it. Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you. That was the point. But the point is we reversed it. And the point was to reverse it to get even a new tack on what we had been thinking from the previous sessions.
Wow. I love that, because you know what, when you're out in nature and you can be out in the air, you know, things release for you.
That's exactly right.
And that's what
the world looks far much more open.
And That's right. And I love it too. You know, walk with me. You're not alone. Walk with me.
That's right.
I think that's exactly that's right. That's really powerful in what I believe in. So how can people get in touch with you?
I appreciate you asking that. You can go to my website, which is www.rabbirauscher.com, RABBIRAUCHER.com. And you have my contact information on there. You can sign up for an appointment with me if you like. Or you can also reach out to me directly over email at noamraucher@gmail.com, noamraucher@gmail.com.
Dr. Rauscher, Rabbi. Yeah. You want to be a doctor? You can be that too today.
There's already enough pressure on me in the Jewish community to be a doctor. No one understands why I went to be a rabbi. So I'll stick with the title that I have student debt for. How about that?
I know. It's wonderful, Rabbi, what you're doing and what you're bringing to the world in terms of understanding high conflict divorce. It's so wonderful to hear someone within spirituality that really gets what divorced people are going through. And I know that you have been there, and that is such a gift that you are doing and giving to the world, because you've walked in their shoes and you know what they need to move forward within their lives. I want to thank you so much for coming on today and giving us great advice of how to move through your high conflict divorce. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Sue. It's a pleasure. And thank you for holding these conversations.
Thank you. All right, everybody. This was another great episode of Dr. Sue and You. This is where we cure conflict, moving beyond your divorce. And remember, everybody, that you can become the solution to any conflict within your life. Compassion cures conflict. Bye-bye.